Hello, 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 everybody. I am Pedro.
And I'm Meredith.
And this gruff woman over in front of me is Meredith. And we are Gritty Reboot.
Yep.
The grittiest goddamn show about movies that there ever was.
So gritty.
And today, this is volume 3 of Fuck the Oscars.
You didn't like the Oscars?
Well, it's just what we call the series. We call the first one Fuck the Oscars. This is Fuck the Oscars. That was Fuck the Oscars 2. This is part 3. Will there be a part 4? Who knows?
Electric Boogaloo.
The only reason we were jazzed about the Oscar broadcast was because of one man, and that was Conan O'Brien.
Yes, I love Conan.
We both love Conan. I grew up with Conan O'Brien.
I came to him late.
I have an early memory of heading to football games on Friday nights, and we would come back. And some of my earliest memories of doing that, my dad would turn on the TV, and it would be so late, Carson wouldn't be on anymore. It'd be Letterman. And I could remember him there. And I just knew there was one time that we came home and it wasn't Letterman there. It was Conan.
Hell yeah.
And that was the first memory I had of him. Oddly enough, I just really grew to love his comedy style. And it was something that I look forward to being able to stay up to like on Friday nights and see his show. I guess I just continued to do that over the years. I got really lucky that in his like third or fourth season, CNBC would re-air his show, the Financial Channel.
Mm-hmm.
They would re-air late night with Conan O'Brien at like 3 p.m. or 4 p.m. the next day, like right as I came home from school. So I'd come home and I'd watch Conan O'Brien, the show from the night before. And they did that for a number of years. So that's how I watched a lot of Conan, because I just didn't stay up that late.
I believe you're to blame for my love of Conan.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't watch late night television. My parents didn't. I have no concept of it.
Yeah,
they didn't watch it at all.
That was the weirdest part of it. Is I remember the first time I showed you an episode of. I'm thinking it was already on TBS at that time.
Probably.
Yeah, I think he was already on TBS at that time. And I showed you an episode of. Oh, that was really good. So, is there an episode next week? And I was like, no, this one tomorrow. Oh, is it two times? No, he does it. He's going to do the show 4 times a week. Because at that point, it already dropped to just 4.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s and before then, that they did a show on Fridays. I think Colbert, he's already out of that first contract, but his original contract still stipulated, I believe, a Friday show.
Mm.
And so he was the only host, modern host for a while, doing a show on Friday. For about 15 years, The Daily Show has been off on Friday. Since Fallon took over, I don't believe he does live Friday shows, or not live, but I don't think he even does a show on Fridays anymore. They've just conceded that night to other things.
Hmm.
But yeah, Friday used to be a big night for television back in the day. I know things have changed on television.
I remember that's when we would watch, like we had a little tiny TV that would go in our kitchen, and that's where we'd watch The Simpsons, and then, you know, later on in the night, The X-Files.
Yeah, that was always a big part of it.
Yeah.
Later on, that became the Friday Night Death Slot, but ABC for years had the TGIF lineup, and that was a huge block on Friday night. My dad tells me this story about Who Shot JR, you know, the giant Dallas cliffhanger. He remembers that people had portable TVs at a Bobcats football game because it was a Friday night show.
Yeah.
And they just had to know Who Shot JR. So there were TVs and there were people like, shh, as they were trying to make the final revelation. I don't even know Who Shot JR. I'm unfamiliar with that show entirely.
Yeah, me either.
I have no idea who it could possibly be.
I guess we'll never know.
My only real knowledge of it is from The Simpsons parody of Who Shot Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I know it.
Yeah.
So we have talked about Conan O'Brien and then sitcom cliches.
But I love him. I could talk about him forever.
No, I don't know if I've ever felt as bad for celebrities when he lost The Tonight Show. And it obviously it wasn't just that made me love Conan. I'd always loved Conan O'Brien, but that was, you know, like I said, the only moment where something happened to celebrity and I actually gave a shit.
Yeah.
Like I felt I was mad.
Because he's a good guy. Yeah.
I felt angry about it. I loved Conan O'Brien. And it was great to see him up there. It's sad that he was sort of like a desperate choice for them. Like a last option. Basically 4 or 5 people said no and Conan got to do it. And he came in and did a great job.
Yeah.
And it's nothing to, you know, I think Kimmel has been really taken over a lot of default hosting duties over the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to always mix in a little bit of new blood. Like I think Conan did a really nice job. I thought his monologue was really strong. a few of the bits that he did were went over pretty well. And some of the jokes, like he made the pedophile joke about Drake that I thought was really funny. And then that went over, you know, really well. You know, it got a great reaction from the audience, and Conan doesn't care. I don't think anybody's even really talked about it in a negative way. Conan makes comedy in a way that isn't necessarily offensive, you know?
No.
That's not really his style, you know?
He's very slapstick, very simple.
So my only complaint on Conan is that he just kind of disappears in like the last hour of the show.
Yeah, well, that's not necessarily his fault.
Yeah, and I think that's just, once again, the show just ran long, and I think that's one of the things that we'll talk about. So I guess I want to ask you, since we're going to go right into covering the Oscar, talking about them, is what was the standout moment for you? Like, what's the one thing you want to take away from the event?
I was glad to see,
Mikey Madison, yeah.
Yeah, I was glad to see her win, because I thought she was fantastic in Anora.
Yeah, and that was certainly one of the Oscar films that we got to check out. I know there was a bit of controversy afterwards that people were saying, like, the point of The Substance was proven. They went with a younger actress as opposed to the older 62-year-old Demi Moore.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, it could be her last shot or whatever. People are always going to complain about things like that. I think Mikey Madsen gave a great performance. It was just her year. It was Anora's night.
Yeah.
That was my key takeaway, is that Emilia Perez completely fell apart so Anora could rise in this moment and situation and really take everything. Once that movie had the controversy and sort of had, you know, its legs cut out from underneath it, per se, it really just lost a chance at everything. It only won 2 awards, I believe. And Zoe Saldana, I think we all, by the way, learned that we should be pronouncing Zoe Saldana as Zoe Saldana. I had never noticed that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you didn't hear that?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, Zoe Saldana. I just realized I was pronouncing it wrong.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's got an N on it, so you have to pronounce that. But yeah, I didn't even think about it, to be perfectly frank.
We've whiteified our name.
Yeah, I didn't realize until I broadcast. I was like, I've just been saying Zoe Saldana for years. But she'd been a shoe-in to win, so I wasn't really surprised that she did win. I did enjoy her speech, how it started, which is very strange. She just gets up there and goes, Mommy! Mommy, and she was like a kid lost at the supermarket. It was just an odd moment on the night, and her speech was fine. But like I said,
who do you think gave the best speech?
I like Sean Baker's speech. He had to give multiple speeches, which is kind of cool in itself that he pulled off a really impressive feat of winning so many Oscars in one night.
Yeah.
Very few filmmakers edit their own films. That's a rarity. I can only think of a handful of guys who have done it. And to be able to win an Academy Award for directing and editing is a pretty impressive feat. I can't think of really, I'm really trying to think of other directors who really edit. For some reason, my mind's only coming up with Kevin Smith. I don't even know if Kubrick did it. So it's sort of a rare thing to do, but I mean, he did a great job. You know, like I said, it was Anora's night in his year. And I think that's the one thing I'll take away is the kind of domination he had. He had the kind of night a director dreams of at that event. And he's not the kind of guy who I thought would necessarily achieve that. But he, you know, he pulled it off. I don't necessarily have a problem with any of the categories or the wins. Zoe Saldana was, I thought she was a shoo-in to get it. So I don't have any issues there.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I think that's probably the one I would have had the most issue with. But it wasn't like she was bad. And she was the best part of a movie that I didn't care for at all.
Who'd you want to win?
I could have seen Ariana Grande take that thing away.
Yeah,
I could have seen. I thought she surprised me because I went in there ready to hate her and to give her like bad marks. And I was like, damn it, she's pretty funny and charming.
She's really good.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those things to where like every now and then it just kind of gets away. You go in as a critic expecting something, waiting for something to happen, and it doesn't. You get sort of surprised. I didn't think I would enjoy Wicked, and I did. I was a little surprised that it doesn't. That movie didn't resonate in award season like I thought it might.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I was surprised by that.
Yeah. Cynthia Erivo with a shot at a ERGOT, but she had no shot to win that award because it was either Demi Moore or Mikey Madsen.
Yeah.
And this was Zoe Saldana. So everything in this category was wishful thinking. I don't know if she lost a major award.
Yeah.
But director could have gone either way. Once again, I'm glad Emilia Perez did not win that. You know, Sean Baker really deserved to go home with it. So I'm pleased about that.
Yeah. I agree. I love the movie. Of course, we didn't get to spend the amount of time that we wanted to on the movie.
It's been a crazy couple of months. Yeah. And I think Conclave is probably one I'll regret not checking out. That seems like a movie almost right up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
Like a movie about, you know, power and stuff like that in a desperate situation. And the Pope's in poor health now, so it's quite relevant. I really enjoyed the movies that we did see, but I always lament the ones that we didn't. However, I feel bad Emilia Perez was a movie that we sort of had to get to because the controversy just sort of called for it.
Yeah, and it was a bad movie, so we watched it on Friday.
Yeah, on our standard bad movie Friday night, we went and checked that out. And it was appropriate. I mean, I certainly thought it was a bad movie, the fitting of a bad movie Friday.
It was.
I don't know if there was a moment I liked less than... Oh, I tell you what, before I get to my least hurt moment, my most perplexing moment was the Bond tribute.
Yes, that's my least favorite moment.
I'm glad you put it out there because the thing about it is, I don't know if I necessarily hated it. I think I was so confused by it. And then it just wasn't of a high quality. Lisa comes out and she sings one of the Bond songs. I forget which one. And she's okay. Like she doesn't go out there and like nail the notes or anything. But she looks great. And it's a nice little dance, I suppose. And then Doja Cat comes out. She also looks great. But Doja sounds terrible.
She's so nervous.
Doja sounds terrible. And I think she even said that. She was like, I was nervous. Your bitch hit some flats, I think is what she said. Mm-hmm. And she was off key. Then I think Ray came out and she did. I think her bit was the best. I think there was another performer. I forget who else it was. And then Margaret Qualley comes out and dances a little bit to the Bond theme as well. And I thought like, but she's never been a Bond girl. Mm-mm. You could have picked anybody who's been a Bond girl, but she hasn't. It was just sort of a strange display. And I thought it was very strange, especially with, I think, a legendary filmmaker, David Lynch, passing away about a month ago. And not even a quick tribute to him. I mean, he really was a one-of-a-kind legendary director. There's not a lot like him, to be frank. And he's one-of-a-kind, especially with some of the actors in the building. It just seemed like kind of an odd thing to spend that on Bond. Because I would have sworn they did a tribute a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like that one either. But it was better than this.
Yeah, but this didn't make sense.
That's very true.
It didn't make any sense. Was it like a 50th anniversary or... I mean,
I think it was just because the Broccoli's died. Broccoli's? The guy who actually was James Bond?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We saw him in that one movie, The League of Extra Horny Gentlemen. No, Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Oh, we
remember
did?
That one? There's that's one of the guys in that movie supposed to be that guy, Broccoli, the guy who wrote the Bond series. I pointed that out during the movie, and he looked at me and went, oh, and now I'm telling you again. You're like, oh, you give me the same look, and you will not remember this. We'll watch that movie again. You know, that's who James Bond was. Oh, and you're not going to give a shit.
Thank you.
But no, it was a lower moment of the night. I just was sort of confused by it. A James Bond movie, I mean, they're important to cinema, but they've never won an Academy Award besides maybe something like a technical thing. You know, I feel like, okay, the In Memoriam is always for members of the Academy. It just seems sort of strange to me to celebrate, you know, these movies that have never won an Academy Award. You know, the night went long as it was, and that didn't help. And speaking of things that went long, my least favorite moment was Adrien Brody. Everything about Adrien Brody let you know...
He was pretty annoying.
Why he struggles to work. Like, he's going to be gone, and then, like, when he's, like, 65, he'll show up again with, like, another legendary performance in some great young great director's movie and win another Academy Award, probably.
Because you were talking about him throwing his gum to his girlfriend.
Yeah, he took his gum and he threw it at his girlfriend as he walked up. And I thought, like, he was blowing her a kiss, and I thought, how strange. And then she, like, reached out for it. And I was like, what an odd bit. I only came to find out later that, like I said, he did throw his gum at her, which I was like, weird. Why not just...
And she was all willing to catch it.
Yeah. Like,
she was ready.
I just... Like,
this has happened before.
Yeah, like, if you won a major award, you were going to make a speech, and you looked at me and said, oh, wait, and you threw your gum at me, my only reaction would be to step out of the way.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to hit the ground, and I'm going to ask you later, like, hey, congratulations, great job. Why did you throw used gum at me? Is this a tradition I don't know about? Was that for good luck? Was that part of a...
I would never do that.
Was that part of a Faustian deal you made?
I'm not a gum chewer.
It's just a very strange thing, and he couldn't have been... I guess he was nervous at that moment that he might lose, so that's why he was chewing the gum. But I just don't know why, like, he just couldn't take a moment to either... Like, have an exit plan for the gum other than throwing it at his wife. Yeah.
Maybe.
He didn't have any piece of paper at all. He just dropped it. Maybe he didn't chew on it all night and dropped it and just didn't think about it. I think I'd have preferred to swallow it as opposed to, like, what do I do? I would never have thought, hey, go catch.
Yeah.
I would never have thought to do that, ever.
I would probably react the same way. Just move aside.
Yeah, yeah. That's all it was done. Like, I don't know why you made that decision, and I hate that. But then he went up there, and he made a speech, and it wasn't a great speech. And he got the sign from the bullpen. You know, he got the symphony to come up. And he pulled this really arrogant move of like, hey, this isn't my first rodeo. I've done this before. Out of the way. Let me speak.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing really wrong with that, per se. He said, I'll be brief. And then he wasn't brief at all.
He kept saying, I'll be brief.
And then he rambled on and on and on. He gave the longest speech, I believe, in Oscar history and said nothing of note. There's nothing wrong with giving a longer speech. Kieran Culkin in the night gave a longer speech. And he told that delightful story about his wife and them having four babies now because he won an Academy Award.
Yeah.
That was a long story, but it had a punchline the audience loved.
Yeah.
Except maybe for Jeremy Strong, who was a little bitter he didn't win. And you know what? That's okay. I have no issue. I know he'll say, no, I wasn't bitter. I was distracted or whatever. I have no issue with a guy like being pissed off he lost.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the Apprentice film, but I've heard he was excellent in it. Roger Stone, who actually knew the guy he played, said he should have won an Academy Award. So that's pretty high praise.
Hmm.
But that was probably my favorite speech of the night. That was well done in another movie that I didn't get a chance to check out, sadly.
Yeah.
Sorry. But you know, Adrian Brody's speech was the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
And that was definitely my lowest moment of the night. And I was just ready to get moving and get out of there. So.
Yeah, he was pretty annoying. I give you that 100%.
Yeah, yeah. I think he kissed Halle Berry the last time on the lips during his first Academy Award win.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I think she went with it, you know, she wanted to make it weird. So it's kind of whatever. And I think she made a joke about it on the red carpet going at this Oscars a couple nights ago.
Hmm.
But yeah, I think, I mean, all in all, it was a fair show.
I liked last year's better.
I do agree with that. I think it was a bit of a tighter show, and I think it's always a little more helpful when they have really popular films in the running. You know, Anora wasn't a particularly popular movie. Out of the last 20 years, I think it's one of the lowest grossing Academy Award winners, you know, like bottom five.
Well, even we struggled to watch them.
Well, I think that's one of the things that you see around this time, and it shows in the ratings. The ratings went down a little bit from last year, and I mean, ratings just down in general. Before the pandemic, Okay, turn of the century, we were probably getting around 50 million people to watch. 50 million people watched James Cameron win an Oscar for Titanic. And since the pandemic occurred, those numbers are less than 20 million now. A couple years, last year's show did around 19.5, and that was much better. This year's did a little bit lower, 18.8, and that's higher than like 2 years ago and 3 years ago, but still down.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question is, where's the relevancy of the Oscars to a regular person?
Well, I don't think it's there.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think there is a level of elitism in Hollywood that has almost completely eliminated them from the common man, with the exception of a few films here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they should necessarily be surprised by that. But it's just something to note is, whatever is an Oscar-winning movie, I don't know if people even give a shit about it. I mean, sure, I think, like last year, Everything Everywhere All at Once, that was really helpful because that was a really unique film. And I think anybody could watch that movie and sort of get in on the fun of it.
Yeah, I agree.
So that is really helpful when an Oscar winner is accessible. And Something to Know isn't accessible. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's like a Pretty Woman with like a realistic take to some extent, you know?
I mean, it's my fault we haven't watched Conclave because I just haven't fucking given a shit.
Yeah.
I just don't care.
And I think that's it, too. I think people look at these movies and they see, like, the brutalist 3 hour and a half.
Oh, my God.
3.5 hour runtime.
3.5 hours.
Yeah.
I mean,
That was Adrian Brody's tribute to the runtime, was to give the longest Oscar speech ever.
What the fuck?
But I'm sure it's a great film.
Sure it is, but I'd have to watch it in shifts. I couldn't sit there and watch it the whole 3.5 hours.
40 minutes a night until you finally get through it.
Yeah, something.
It just basically turned into a miniseries.
Might as well be. 3.5 fucking hours.
I think it is one of those things that Hollywood has to be very cautious of, is they're slowly moving away from being the head of like the monoculture of these movies being so important. Like right now they're just trying to get right back into doing Marvel movies and things like that. Hollywood needs a real shot in the arm. You know, I don't think people feel like anything compelling or truly original comes out. It just happens to sneak out if it does.
It's all remakes. I mean, it's good business for us, But
it is. Yeah. Keep them coming, Hollywood. Don't change the.
It is. Never mind. It's literally reboots and remakes. There's nothing original except Oscar movies. But then you have to sit through 3.5 hours.
What are you talking about? We have a Minecraft movie. That's a new IP. Aren't you excited for that Minecraft movie?
Just because fucking Super Mario Brothers made some money, now we're going to get all these fucking terrible ass video game movies.
I remember,
like it was in the 90s.
I think on Reddit, people were criticizing the action figure for it. They're like, it's just Jack Black with a sword. And they're like, have you seen the movie trailer? It's just Jack Black with a sword. And I was like, well, that's pretty fair. That's a movie I have no expectations of, and I'm hoping to be surprised by it, but it'll probably be something that I look at with shame.
I don't even think Maya has even
shown. She's talked about it a little bit.
Has she?
Yeah, she's talked about it a little bit. She's interested in Minecraft and that property, so, you know, now's that time we're going to get properties that we don't understand getting made into movies, you know, as we get a little bit older. We're like, oh, we don't know why this has become a movie necessarily.
We'll see the next Roblox movie.
That's how it goes. This is the first time this ever happened when I was a reviewer at the time, and I had to go see the Bratz movie. And I had no concept of what this was. And during the credits, I'm like, is this a doll? Are these dolls?
Yeah.
Am I in a doll movie right now? I said, Chuck, you better fucking show up here, all right? Like, and I just had no idea that was a problem. And that's going to happen more and more as we move on.
Yeah.
I can imagine there's somebody who might go see a Minecraft movie and go, so is this a game? Has no concept of what it might be. But sometimes it's how it goes. You get older, you're just unaware. You're like me, just playing 30-year-old games on my little Miu Mini.
My brother's even doing that now.
Yeah.
Got my brother hooked.
Yeah, he's playing, what did he do, a remake of Halo on the SNES or something like that is what he's playing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, and that's what's fun. At least that's what I've enjoyed about it is like finding like ROM hacks. I'm just about to, when you leave here, I want to put like a ROM hack on the shield of an old wrestling game and see how it works. I'm going to wrestle 1980 style in a 1990 style game.
Hmm.
We'll see. Hey, listen, this is what I like to have fun. Uh-huh. We do a show on Gritty Reboots because nostalgia is a big part of it. And I think that is something that's key. And it brings me back to my other point of, I don't know if Hollywood is making great nostalgia for a generation like Maya.
Yeah.
You know, for a generation like our daughters and a little older. I don't know if they're necessarily doing that like they did when we were kids.
That's a shame.
You know, and I think that's something that has to be explored and you know, as we've corporatized everything, you know, it's led to less general bursts of creativity. You know, there's fewer and far between.
Mm.
The system is worse than it used to be. And now it's more sanitized because you can get picked off or canceled or something like that. I know some filmmakers tend to fail upwards, but, you know, some of the great directors just don't ever get their due.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to depress me.
Well, you know, it's how I like to do it, to end on a low note.
Yeah, let's end on a very low note.
So the Oscars, the ratings were down because Conan O'Brien sucks.
Hey. Not a bad word will be said about Conan in this house.
No, I the ratings are what they are. I hope that they can change how they're going, but I am doubtful. I think we're going to see ratings continue to drop on all these award shows. Things like the Golden Globes are barely even on TV. I remember thinking that with Nikki Glaser hosting, I was like, who would even give a shit to watch that?
And who is Nikki Glaser?
Yeah, that's all I could think of. I was like, I think the only people watching this are like industry analysts, people who work in the film business.
Maybe.
And people who are influencers who talk about movies. Like, I was like, that's the only person I can think of watching the Globes or the SAG Awards or something like that.
Yeah, Hollywood still goes to that award.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I remember when, like, the Golden Globes was going to own Sunday night because that was something people wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
Each show had a different vibe to it. It's just not the same. Those award shows of Hollywood patting itself on the back and you know, blowing itself. I don't think people really care about that anymore. But with that being said, I believe we've wrapped up our Oscar coverage for this year.
Yeah, we probably would have gone into detail about some of the movies, but we just didn't get a chance to see them.
Yeah, that's why we didn't do our picks and anything like that. Like I said, it's been a really busy and stressful time. I haven't had the most amount to really watch movies, but we're going to get back to setting a schedule now that we're going to get in our ways here. So we got to take advantage of the weekends to watch as many movies as we can.
Yeah.
and try to work on whatever our next feature is going to be, because we're probably going to decide that over this dinner here.
Yeah, we're going to have to figure it out.
Yeah.
But if you want to tell us anything that we're doing wrong or maybe right,
yeah,
you can hit us up at grittyrebootcast@gmail.com.
Or you can simply search Gritty Reboot on any social media site that you might happen to use.
Yeah.
Because we will be represented there with little clips and just segments of me and my musings towards the camera. I think you get to watch now and you can see my musings on Daisy Ridley and her weird diehard knockoff that barely got promoted.
Hmm.
But yeah, with that, we are out. Roger Ebert had nothing to do with this, so we have nothing to bring him in on. So that's the show, and we'll see you guys next week.
All right, guys.